So for today's podcast, I have a special treat for you. This is the first time this has ever happened. I was interviewed by somebody else for their podcast. How do you like them apples? This is from one of my sober pen pals. He goes by Con on my site. His name is Richard Powell. And he's on day 100 today. Yay, hooray. We should all cheer for him. And to celebrate his day 100, he asked me to be a guest on his podcast. Now, it doesn't matter whether you drink a little or a lot, you will find this podcast very interesting. And you may hear me say some things that you've never heard me say before because you've never heard me interviewed before. The other thing is that to be completely fair and open about his politics, because he has a blog that may say things that you don't agree with, or that you perhaps believe that I don't agree with, and I'm saying it doesn't matter. We were talking about being sober, and we were celebrating his 100 days, and talking about my book and my site and stuff. And so, I don't want to send you over to his site and then have you crap all over him if you don't like his politics, okay? Because my pen pals and my listeners are sober, supportive people, or they don't say anything. I can't... On my own blog, I can sort of delete comments that I think are crappy, but I wouldn't want you to go to his blog and find anything, because it's a political blog. I wouldn't want you to find anything to take offense to. Just listen to this audio, which I'm now going to copy in here so you can listen to it here as well. But if you go to his website, if you're interested, it's contrarianonline.liberty.me. Contrarianonline, all one word, .liberty.me. And it's episode number 36. I'm going to copy it in now so you can listen to it. And it's long. It's like 40 minutes, 45 minutes. And we talk about lots of interesting things. So let me know. What do you think? And maybe this will be like the beginning of me being interviewed in different places. I don't know. Do you have a blog? Do you have a podcast? Do you need to interview me? It'll help me practice. Okay. Talk to you soon. Okay. Goodbye.
This is Contrarian Online, episode 36.
Oh, you're one of them. Gun control, government, morality, education, political correctness, freedom, gay marriage. What is the truth? Is there a truth?
Good day, citizens. It's Richard Powell again, Contrarian Online. Welcome to another episode of The Contrarian. Well, today's episode, I was going to share something a little more personal with you, a personal experience I had. I have the name, or I use the name The Contrarian for a reason. It seems like a lot of things out there are contrary to, like I said, the mainstream. In this case, we're talking about drinking, a drinking problem, alcoholism, if you would. You know, the main idea in the mainstream is if you have a problem, you go to AA or you go to some rehab center somewhere. And in my situation, it's kind of funny, I guess. So, in the situation I was alone in a room in Wichita, Kansas. So what does a man who has a drinking problem alone in Wichita, Kansas do? Well, obviously he will contact a caterer in France, Paris, France. Obviously that's what he would do. But here's the thing. I'm going to share with you an audio clip from an audio file, one of the first ones I listened to. This person, her name is Belle Robertson. She has you subscribe to her site. We'll get into that I'm going to have her on as a guest. And I'm honored to have her on as a guest because she's really helped me out a lot. But that first download of the series of talks that she gives, there's a point where it really resonated with me, and I wanted to share that with you because it really meant a lot to me at the time, and it still means a lot to me. So I'll let you listen to that.
Here's what I have to say to you. You are not broken. You are not broken. When you drink, it makes a noise in your head, and it makes you think that you're broken. It makes you feel like you are, but you're not. It's the booze. And you remove the booze, and all of that goes away. And you're going to be shocked at how fabulous it is.
Yes. You will be shocked. If, that is, if you have an issue with drinking. But I wanted to share this interview that I had with Belle Robertson. Very nice lady. And I want you to sit back and listen to Belle and what she has to say. I want to thank her for being a guest on my show. So here we go. Thank you. I would like to welcome Belle Robertson. She is the author of a book, Tired of Thinking About Drinking. And I'm glad that she's here today. Very helped me out a lot. Changed my life. And the main thing I wanted to do is just start out and have her explain herself. It didn't start with this book, right? It started with your blog.
Right.
Can you go into detail about that, please, Belle?
Sure. I started a blog when I realized that I was going to fail. So I wanted to do a 30-day sober challenge, which seems like a reasonable thing to try, particularly if you're a person who likes to drink and you think, oh, well, 30 days won't be that hard. And so I signed up to do something called Dry July, which is an online fundraiser sobriety thing. And I thought, this will be fine. I don't have a problem. I'm not an alcoholic. It'll be fine. And I got about 7 days in, I think, and I realized that I was going to fail. Like I wasn't going to be able to keep going. And I did something radical for me, which was I started an online blog, which was a way of holding myself accountable, but also reaching out and saying, okay, I don't know what I'm doing. There must be somebody out there who's more successful at this than I'm apparently going to be. And I didn't realize that just reaching out was going to make that much of a difference. So I started with the blog, and then, like you said, it sort of went from there.
Yeah, and, well, I'd have to say I have not read your book.
You haven't read the book?
No.
You read the blog.
I feel like, well, I mean, you came out with a book, what, a month after I started the program that you have?
Yeah.
And what I can share with the audience is my experience with this. It was April 16th. I don't want to get too detailed about what my life is like. I work three 12-hour shifts in a town 100 miles away from me. And I'm alone in a house by myself. I have a place I stay while I'm working there. And it was April 16th, and I had tried I don't know how many different ways to Sunday to stop drinking.
Right.
And I sit there and I was thinking to myself, I had a bottle of wine, and I think the longest I'd gone prior to that, maybe 12 days.
Yeah, for me it was 9. My longest without support was 9. That's the maximum I could do.
And I used to think, if I get to a certain point, it's okay. Everything will be fine. I won't have to worry about drinking anymore. And I'd get like to day 12. But now I can go ahead and drink normally, like normal people drink.
Right. Like I'm going to celebrate my sobriety with a drink.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I deserve it. I deserve this.
Right.
So I'm going to have a drink. And it just cascade back into the same rut again. And I'm like, what in the hell is wrong with me? And what I realized, I don't know which one I would describe as the symptom versus the illness. And I don't like to use the word illness. It's not an illness. But one of the symptoms was this voice in my head, like you describe it, drink. And that's the thing. I had hit several different, I'd tried different books. And, you know, I won't have you, I mean, unless you want to, there's like a Lance Dotus, who's a MD.
Yep.
There's this, what's it called? I have it written down here. Rational Emotional Behavior Therapy, which it sounds good and it sounds reasonable, but every single book I hit, there's another book, Rational Drinking, How to Live Happily with or Without Alcohol. That sounds great, doesn't it?
All that stuff about moderation, it's appealing to us and our brain.
Yeah, oh, yeah.
We don't want to give it up, right? We have a voice in our head that says, drink now. Drink now. Is it time to drink now? What about now? I should drink
now. Well, that's what was so funny about me sitting in that room in that house by myself with my bottle of wine, boo-hooing to myself about what in the heck am I going to do? And I kept thinking, you know what I'm really tired of? Mm. It's just like the title of the book. I am tired of thinking about drinking. And that, I put those words into a Google search. And ta-da, there's Belle. And I'm like, what is this? And it fits my symptoms and what I'm looking for, some solution to my problem. And the thing, what gets me now when I look at some of these books, they always talk about an activating event that's going to cause you to drink later on today. And I kind of laugh because I think, well, the activating event is me getting up in the morning.
It's Tuesday. That's my event.
The thing is, I'm just going to start thinking about drinking.
Right.
That's the activating event.
Right.
I mean, I can't think that somebody kicked me in the shin or said something, some slight to me. No. There was nothing that fit that scenario. And I won't take anything away from any of these doctors like Lance Dotus or anybody like that. It's just, I think there's probably just different ways it affects different people.
Right.
And that's what I was going to ask you. I was thinking about is your experience. I don't know how many people you have, your pen pals or, sober pals with now or anything, but throughout all those individuals, is there a characteristic that fits them that you think might fit them versus somebody else that has maybe different symptom besides thinking about drinking?
Sure. I think, I've been sober for 4 years now. The blog that I wrote turned into a pen palling thing and a class and a book. And I've been pen pals with over 2,400 people. And there are definitely a group of us, which I call high-bottom drinkers, which are people who don't associate with other groups of over-drinkers. We don't associate as alcoholics. We don't associate with AA necessarily, although some people in my group do go to AA.
Mm-hmm.
But there's a whole big part of the world that's not addressed, which is the person who drinks too much. And so if drinking is an elevator that only goes down, you don't have to wait until you get to the bottom of the elevator to step off. And that's what I discovered with the people that I've been emailing, is that there's no voice out there for the high bottom drinker, like me, who drank 2 or 3 glasses of wine a night, but every night, and found it very difficult to quit. And so what I found is that even if you drink 3 glasses a night or 3 bottles a night, it's still hard to quit. And some of the same tools that work for me, turns out, work for everybody. Now, I should tell you that I do sometimes get some backlash that my bottom isn't lower. If you can imagine, there are some people who think, well, she never did this, therefore she can't relate. And have you ever had that experience too, where you're listening to somebody talk about their really low bottom? This is the reverse side. You hear somebody talk about their really low bottom, and I think, well, I can't relate to that.
Oh, yeah. And, that's why maybe you've talked about maybe not necessarily sharing it with people unless you really want to, and because it turns into, well, I'll talk to you again in a month and a half to see where you're at. And,
right.
And it
seemed like a novel idea to me to actually just stop drinking and not make a big declaration about it and not tell everybody I had a problem. Like, you can just not drink.
Right. Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah, and I was trying to think where I was going with that, but Well, they just look at you like, you don't have a problem. What's your big deal? I mean, you show up to work every day.
Right.
You're not showing up here all boozed up. That's like my wife. Well, the thing that stands out in my mind is she never knew what was going on a lot of times, because I would tell myself, I'm not going to drink anymore. Da, 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 da. Go to bed, get up. You know, I drank, got up, and I was so disappointed in myself. I was just kicking myself so bad. As I was coming out, she'd already be up. I had this look on my face, and she's like, "What's wrong?" And I'd say, "Nothing."
Right.
Well, and I'm just beating myself up because here you go again. You did it again, and there, you know, what are you going to do? You're just going to keep doing this and drinking for the rest of your life like this.
Right.
And, you know, just beating yourself up.
But see, that's the thing. It's how we feel about ourselves. It isn't
exactly.
It's not the external manifestations of what overdrinking does, although there are many. And it's not even the risks of falling down the stairs, although that is a risk, clearly.
Oh, yeah.
And I nearly passed out in a bathtub, and I have a high bottom. So it's not like high bottom people don't die from this. They do. But it's more about how the noise in my head was so loud, like the noise that said, you should drink now. What about now? Did he get more than you? Is there more left? Should we go out and get more? Is it time? And like you said, get up in the morning, quit in the morning, drink by 6 o'clock.
Oh, yeah. And my thing is, I worked 3 days. That was really starting to become a... I mean, I didn't... When I started drinking, I had a regular work week of 5 to 6 days a week. And I just... My evenings were spent drinking, but when I ended up having, I worked 3 days and had 4 days off. Oh my goodness.
Right.
That turned into, it was like, I knew the liquor store opened at 9. Well, 9's a little too early to be drinking. So, you know, the worst days, my wife and my daughter, she's living here with us, and the days that they both went to work and I had a place to myself, it was like, okay, there's no reason why I can't, you know, start pounding some down right now.
Right.
And that just ate up my whole day. If my day was not ate up with drinking, it was thinking about drinking.
Right.
Like, I'd be at work just saying, well, I'm, like you said, start out thinking, I'm not going to drink today.
Mm-hmm.
And by, maybe 10 in the morning, I'm thinking, I think I'm going to, yeah. And the decision has already been made. But the thing was, even before that, you're sitting there arguing with yourself about it. So you're thinking about drinking, and it's a lot of wasted time and a lot of wasted energy.
Well, and people who try to moderate, like who say, I'm going to have one drink and then stop, or I'm going to have two drinks, or they make rules for themselves. I'm going to drink only on weekends or only on special occasions, whatever kind of deal they make, still requires a lot of thinking about drinking. And it turns out it's actually easier to have none. And
yes.
That doesn't seem possible when you're trying to moderate and you're unsuccessful at moderating. It seems impossible that since you're a failure at moderation, how could you possibly quit? You're going to be a failure at that.
Yeah. And, well, right now, I'm kind of like, I feel like I'm in a strange place because I still think about it. But I don't know. It's like sometimes I think, how is it that I'm not drinking?
Well, we should tell people what day you're on, because that's significant, whether you're still thinking about it or not, because there's like a timeline, right?
Yeah, it's getting easier.
Right.
But I'm at day 94.
Right. And when you get to 180, when you get to 180, you're going to notice a huge shift.
Excuse me. Tell my audience,
we're
recording this early.
Okay.
When this airs, this will be my 100th day.
Okay. 100th day. Is that how you're going to celebrate your 100th? That's fabulous. That's great.
Yeah, this is my 100th day podcast.
In the future, yeah.
Excuse me, I was meant to talk about that like it was, but it's okay.
It's okay, we gave it away, but okay, fine.
The gig's up. I'm on day 94 now, and I'm one of those people that I still won't mark the day on the calendar off until the day's over.
Right.
It's like, so I'm being optimistic that I will make 100 days without drinking.
Right.
But
to be clear, if you and me both couldn't get more than 7 or 9 or 12 days on our own, then what did you do differently that other people are listening to this thinking, well, I can't have what he has. He's got something magical. He's special. He can quit. I can't. What did you do differently?
I took the advice Belle gave me.
Oh,
I
me. Took the, it was not the, an the two, no. It was not an invitation to blow smoke up my ass.
Well, I'm going to.
Oh, fine.
But I have an e-cigar, so it won't be. It won't harm you.
Okay, thanks.
I don't think anyway. But she gives you tools, and the thing that gets you is, like, if you're doing it on your own, when I was doing it on my own, you don't know what to expect. In my mind, I had it figured out that if I got to a certain point, I should be fine. I should be out running marathons and doing this and doing that, and there shouldn't be an issue anymore. But I would get to, the longest I got prior to this was like 12 days. And I would think, okay. But in the back of my mind, I can moderate now. Mm-hmm. I got this whooped. And I kept falling right back in the same rut. And as I alluded to at the very beginning, I was playing an audio from one of Belle's podcasts, and she said, "You're not broken." And that's the thing. You're not broken. You just need, yeah, well, that's it, isn't it? You need help. A little bit of help. A cranky old guy like myself who is independent, doesn't want any help. Yes, you need help. Just as I am an avionics technician and I need tools to do my job, there are times in your life you need tools to do other things. And the tools are in different forms. She gives you tools to what expect, what you should do. One of the big things that really helped me, and I kind of knew this intuitively, was to have a replacement drink. And that helps me a lot. And, you know, like they talk about some of these things, you know, this alcohol's an addiction. It's a compulsive behavior. You're just going to trade it off for something else. Mm. Well, if my compulsive behavior is
diet tonic,
cranberry juice and tonic water mixed together, I'll live with that. Yeah. That's fine.
Exactly. Well, and the thing is, I mean, if it is on a continuum of obsessive traits, which I probably think it is, then it's not like we're compulsive hand washers. Although there are people who are compulsive drinkers who will drink mouthwash. That does exist. But for those of us who are at a different point on that continuum, it's like we have a brain, though, that gets fixated on, did I check the lock? I need to check the lock one more time. I'm not sure the door is locked. And it is a similar kind of rumination. What we don't realize, though, is that in drinking, we feed the voice in our head, which makes it louder. And that if you stop drinking, the voice gets quieter. That's very non-intuitive when you're drinking. It doesn't seem possible that if you stop drinking, the voice will stop.
Well, the analogy you make is corn on the cob. And it just makes me die laughing when I listed that.
Okay.
Again. And it makes perfect sense. When you, especially if you explain it to someone who, like my wife.
Should I tell the corn on the cob story?
Well, yeah, go ahead. It's great because I explained it to my wife because, you know, it helped her understand because I asked her when was the last time she had a drink. Well, I don't know.
Right.
That's what you call a normie. Go ahead and explain that.
That's it, though. It's like, people who are normies, what we call normies, normal drinkers, don't obsess about drinking, don't count, don't care. Don't care if they drink today or later. They don't know when the date of their last drink is. The same way that you and I don't know when is the last time we had corn on the cob. We don't obsess about corn on the cob. We don't get up at 11 o'clock at night to go out and get more corn on the cob. We aren't at an event eating corn on the cob, planning on how to get more to go home. We don't plan our 4-day vacation around when we can start eating corn on the cob. And what's hard for us to believe is that there's people out there who feel the same way about alcohol. They don't think about it. They can take it or leave it. They really don't care. And that's when people say, well, how do I know I have a problem with alcohol? It's like, well, do you feel about alcohol the way you feel about corn on the cob? Then it means that you're thinking about alcohol more than you want to be.
Oh, yeah. And like I said, it seems to eat up so much energy and time. And actually, one of the things I did
when I first quit drinking, this office that I'm in now became my cave and my all I could tolerate. And I started just, I used to do podcasts. I was doing them daily. And that's what was keeping me sane. I was just doing one right after the other. Now I'm down to, you know, doing them twice a week because I have a full-time job and it was becoming, you know, too much. But it helped me through that first phase of it all. I'd say the first, 16, maybe closer to 30 days. It was
right.
And
just something else to focus on.
Well, and what a terrible thing to be focusing on.
Exactly. And you know what? Sometimes people, though, when they first quit drinking, they focus on watching House of Cards on Netflix, or they focus on decluttering their kitchen, or they focus on sleeping through the night, or they focus on reading a book and actually remembered what they read, or they focus on being awake for their children after 7:30 p.m.
Yeah, that's a good point, because that was something else that the drinking was eating up.
Sure.
Was the time in the evening that I was with my family. Well, I think this drinking, over drinking, was probably maybe a 5-year span, I would suspect it was,
mm-hmm.
because it's kind of slowly escalated to a point. But a lot of that time is just gone. I can't have it back. But instead of, you know, grumbling to myself, oh, I lost all that. Well, at least I have it now. And that was one thing I was going to get across about this Lance Dodis. If I first came across this Lance Dodis,
he's a psychiatrist, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I talk about him. I talk about the Tom Woods show. He's another libertarian that has a podcast.
Right.
And that's where I heard him at. And Tom Woods is episode 342,
right.
If you want to listen to this. He he's not too thrilled about the 12-step program, or the thing that I want to get across is what struck me when I listened to that episode is, and it, I can see it happening and unfortunately happening, is people spend a lot of time, and especially if they go to these rehab centers where it's a high dollar amount,
mm-hmm.
and you can just imagine someone, you know, like a father going into debt to send his son there to get rehabbed.
Right.
And he goes and he comes back out and he fails.
Right.
Just imagine the guilt. On top of having a problem with drinking, you have this guilt you're dealing with. And, you know, regardless of what you may think about some of these things, I think that's kind of a bad deal for someone to feel terrible on top of having a problem with drinking. Now you're a failure, and you've cost your family their life savings.
Right.
And I don't think that helps the situation any at all. Go ahead.
Sorry. No, I was going to say, imagine you've got a voice in your head that is so loud saying, drink now, drink now, drink now, that even when you spend $35,000 a month on rehab, it's not enough.
No. No, and you just added on to the problem. And,
right. Well, I think that's one of the things about AA and rehab in general is that it works really well for some people. The same way that what I do online with my book and my website and the pen pals that I have works really well for some people. But there isn't like a solution that works for everybody, and there should.
Oh, right.
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 But
it's very individualized.
Right. But they get excited about percentage of success rates. AA's got a 5-8% success rate, and then they make it seem like that's a problem with AA. Instead of saying that this is a hard thing to treat.
Oh, yeah.
It's like chemotherapy, right?
Yeah.
Like, you use chemotherapy, and sometimes it doesn't work. But you try it anyway, and maybe it works for 5 or 10 or 8 or 9%. And maybe that doesn't work, but something else does.
The one thing that I think Dr. Dodis was saying, unfortunately, I don't know how it is across the board, and that's what he said, is, you know, it depends on what AA group you might go to. I mean, they're different. Each one of them is kind of different in its own way. But a lot of times they don't, like I say, it doesn't work for them. There seems to be a lack of them acknowledging it doesn't work and sending you someplace else that may help you.
Sure. And the thing is, the courts aren't going to send you to Bell Online. They're not.
Right.
Because,
they're
you
not.
Know, I'm some girl online who's helping people be sober, but I don't have statistics. Well, I'd say that AA doesn't have statistics either. And how do you count statistics? Like, really, if someone is, like, I've had someone on my list for 3 years who's been trying to be sober with New Day Ones for 3 years, and she just got 100 days. Do you call that a success? I do. I've had someone who joined when she joined and has been successfully sober continuously the whole 3 years. Do you count that as a success? I do. If you've got somebody who goes to AA and uses some of my stuff in addition and creates their own program, and they are sober for 3 months and then they relapse and now they're back on day four, is that a success? Well, I mean, how do you measure those numbers?
Right.
It's not like, are you cured forever? That's the problem. It's not like, and because none of these tools work. It's like saying that gyms don't work because there's a problem with a gym when the problem is compliance.
Yeah.
It's not that there isn't support available for us. It's that we have a voice in our head that says drink now, but that same voice says, I don't need any help.
Yeah.
The same voice that wants you to keep drinking.
Yeah. Well, and that's the thing is, I think that episode was quite a while ago that I heard on Tom Woods' show, and what was it, 5 to 8%? That really made me think, oh, geez. People say, well, why don't you go to AA? And I think about the success rate.
Right.
And I was just looking for anything, but I kind of thought, that's probably not going to work. And the thing that I kept looking for, someone that was addressing my symptom, and like I said, this is the voice in my head. That's
mm-hmm.
what it was.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what was driving me crazy. Maybe that was driving me even more crazy than the drinking itself.
Yeah, that's was the case for me too, absolutely. Yeah, the noise in our head is just so loud.
And what is that noise? Who is that noise?
Well, I think that we have, there's like a Cherokee tale about the story of the grandfather and the little boy, and there's two voices in my head, good and evil, and they're fighting all the time to what kind of person I'm going to be, and the little boy says, which one wins, grandpa? And the grandpa says, the one I feed. And so to me, if we have two voices in our head, like, here's a simplified version of the two voices. I need to go to the bathroom in the middle of the night. I'd really like to keep sleeping. They both exist. And we go back and forth between them as if they're both correct. Okay? That's one example. Another example mm-hmm. is I want to run 5 days a week. I want to run 7 days a week. But every morning you get up and you say, am I going to run today or is it tomorrow? Should I do it later? Should I go now? It's all that thinking.
Mm-hmm.
So if you actually have a voice in your head that says, I think drinking's a good idea. I can't wait till I can have more. Did she get more than me? Is there enough? Why isn't the waiter come back fast enough? Why are they drinking so slowly? Oh, my God, she left 2 inches in the bottom of her glass. When we're having those sorts of thinking. I mean, I used to call that alcohol abuse when people left alcohol in the glass and then went home. Like, that's just not right. When we're having those sorts of thoughts, then we don't believe that there's anything out there that's going to fix that. All we know is that AA exists. We know that AA is not for us. For whatever reason, either we don't want to put our face in a room, because even though it says anonymous, you still have to put your head in a room, whereas the internet is anonymous.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of people have a difficulty with the higher power stuff. And then they look at the statistics and they say, that's not going to work for me because it doesn't work for other people.
Mm-hmm.
And so, I mean, what is it about AA that does work? Community and having someone who's been through it give you some advice.
Yeah. That's the big thing.
Can you get that in other places, including online? I think you can.
Oh, yeah. Oh, well, you're proof of that.
Well, I'm proof that I'm sober because somebody helped me.
Yeah. What's the analogy? I'm standing on the shoulders of greater men
giants.
Somebody's been before. Yeah.
Right. But if you look at, like, the problem of... If you say that AA works for some people and doesn't for others, and you say that a gym, an exercise facility, it's not the problem with the exercise facility. The problem is that compliance. The biggest problem with treating over drinking, whether it's 3 glasses or 3 bottles, is that we have a voice that says, I don't want to quit. I like drinking. I don't need to quit 100%. I know I've got problems with drinking. I know I drink too much. I know I think about it too much, but I don't want to quit. And so one of the reasons that I introduced the 100-day challenge is that you don't have to want to quit forever. You can just do a trial of 100 days. And I think probably when you saw my website, that becomes appealing. It's like a challenge. I can do it for 100 mm-hmm. days. I don't know if I'll like it. Maybe I'll drink again on day 101, but like you signed up to do the 100-day challenge with me.
Mm-hmm.
And you sent me your email on whatever day it was, the 16th of April.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And, well, actually, I was just stunned that there was a website that was fitting my Google search of tired of thinking about drinking.
Right.
Well, I'm curious, is that an anomaly? Someone typing in tired of thinking about drinking, or do you know?
Well, I can track the statistics of people who come to my site, and it is common, but also is common where people say how to quit drinking without AA.
Okay.
And I'm not anti-AA at all. I think that...
Oh, I understand that. I've heard you talk about it. That's fine.
But for the audience, I'm pro-tools, whatever tools work for you.
Yeah.
And if AA is a tool, then use it. Yeah.
I kind of figured that's what you'd say.
Yeah. But I mean, when I hear people like that podcast that we were listening to, one of the things that the psychiatrist said in his interview was that it's very difficult for any professional to say that their tool doesn't work because they're making money from it. So recovery-based facilities, mm-hmm. like if you go to Hazleton, they're not mm-hmm. going to tell you that the percentage success rate isn't great. They're going to tell you they've got horses and a big patio where you can sit outside in the sun and play cards. Because it's not in their best interest to say that AA only works for some people and it doesn't work for the majority of people, but that nothing works for the majority of people. That's the problem.
Yeah, and...
So the psychiatrist wasn't going to say it either, though. He's saying what they need is this, but he's not going to say, look, I'm making my living from saying this.
Well, I have his book.
And does he recommend intensive psychotherapy with a registered psychiatrist? My guess is he does.
Oh, yeah, of course he does.
Right.
And the thing I could say is, Dr. Lance Dotus, I read your book, and it didn't help me. I mean, I'm not, that's a perfect analogy, or example. There's different solutions for different people.
Right.
And I guess if we were going to end today, and we get close to the end here, I would say, if you're having a problem drinking, and you just... keep looking. Don't think it's AA. You don't have to necessarily think it's Bell, but I think Bell would probably say, yeah, come to me too.
Bell would say, there's a million tools out there. I am one of
them.
A
million.
Put together
That's
your own
right.
toolbox. I might be 5% of your tools. I might be 50% of your tools. But that's the problem. Here's the problem. You know, you're the only one who knows what's going to work for you. And it doesn't matter mm-hmm. what anybody suggests is the right program. You have to put together your own program.
Yeah, you're right. Well, we're all unique.
Right.
That's the thing.
Right.
There's not one size fits all for this situation. And, well, Belle, I appreciate you being on today. I'll let you have anything else you want to add about your website, anything else. Here you go.
I call the voice in our head Wolfie, the voice that says, based on the Cherokee thing, the Wolfie, the voice. And I think the biggest thing that I realized in doing the emails with the 2,400 people or teaching the class or doing the audios or the podcast or whatever is that we all hear Wolfie and we all hear him saying the same things, which is shocking because we all think we're alone. And that when you get into the sober community a bit and you reach out a bit and you listen to somebody else, it doesn't have to be me, let me just put that in there, somebody, mm-hmm. what you recognize is that you're not alone because we're all hearing the same thing. And what we hear is, I'm broken, I'm a disaster, I'm never going to solve this, I've already blown it with my kids, I've already lost that time, my kid has autism, my father has cancer, my car needs to be replaced, I deserve this. And when you tap into the sober world, you realize that we're all hearing exactly the same thing, almost exactly the same words, including, you're broken. And so you touched on this before. One of the first messages I give in the Jumpstart class, which is the class that goes with the challenge, the first was it in message one or in the introduction? I don't even remember.
That's it's the one after the introduction.
Right.
The
okay.
First one.
Lesson one, where I actually say to you, because it's me talking one-on-one to you in mm-hmm. the audios, and I say, you are not broken. And for some people, that's the first time they've ever heard that. And they think that they're broken when, in fact, if they remove the alcohol, a lot of this stuff all stops. A lot of these problems, whatever they are, stop. And it's not like being sober solves all of life's problems. It doesn't. But it makes it possible to solve life's problems. Because when we're drinking, we can't do anything. We can't solve anything.
No, that's very true. Well,
here we are.
Here we are.
We drove that sober car right to the end.
Yes, we did. Well, one thing I'm going to ask Belle to do after I give my little extra or in the show, I'm going to ask Belle to do her little bye-bye, because there is nothing that'll cheer you up more than that.
Oh, I have a signature way of saying goodbye at the end of all of my audios, which has turned out to be a thing, which, of course, you don't expect. Oh, yeah. Okay.
Well, and the thing is you hear that bye-bye at the end, you're thinking, now there's got to be something to this, if somebody can sound like that.
Okay. All right. That's a setup.
Well, here we go.
Okay.
I'll do my little thing.
All right, fine.
This is Richard Powell, Contrarian Online. You have a nice day. Thank you.
I'll talk to you again soon. Okay, goodbye.